You may be seated.
It is the third Sunday of June, and that means three things. Number one, I think most of us know that means that it's Father's Day, so happy Father's Day to all the fathers, grandfathers who are here and listening. Second of all, it means that it is our anniversary with Maston Lake Road. My first Sunday, 2005, was the third Sunday of June, Father's Day, so this is 16 years. And third, you know that it means we're going to look at Luke chapter 15. So if you would, turn to Luke 15. We're going to be reading from our text that we have looked at almost every third Sunday of the year of June, every year on this particular occasion as we think about Father's Day. And we're going to read, of course, the parable that Jesus tells beginning in verse 11. Luke chapter 15, beginning at verse 11. He said, "A certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me.' So he divided to them his living. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed into a far country, and there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. But when he had spent all, there arose a great famine in that land, and he began to be in want. Then he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into the fields to feed swine. And he would gladly have filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' And he arose and came to his father. But when he was still a good way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet, and bring the fatted calf here and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' They began to be merry. Now the older son was in the field. And as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of his servants and asked him what these things meant. And he said to him, 'Your brother has come. And because he has received him safe and sound, your father has killed the fatted calf.' But he was angry and would not go in. Therefore his father came out and pleaded with him. So he answered and said to his father, 'Lo, these many years I have been serving you, and I never transgressed your commandment at any time, and yet you never gave me a young goat that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this son of yours came, who has devoured your livelihood with the harlots, you killed the fatted calf for him.' So he said to him, 'Son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. It was right that we should make merry and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive again. He was lost and he is found.'" In this particular text, the way we're going to approach it this morning, and you'll see a slide up on the screen in just a moment here, we're going to be thinking about two different sons who had the same father. And we're going to approach it from the two ways that you see on the screen there, that in regard to the two sons, and there are two sons here. Sometimes we forget about that, but there are two sons.
And as we think about the two sons, we're going to see that sin dealt with each one of them in a different way, but in the end, the same results. But secondly, as we come back and we analyze this text, we're going to see that the father dealt with them the same way, but in the end, with very different results. And so those are your two major points, the two ways that we're going to analyze our text once again as we look at this marvelous parable of Jesus. Some have called it, I think it was Charles Dickens, who maybe this is attributed to, the greatest short story ever told. It has also been called the gospel within the gospel. 12 times the term father occurs in these verses that we have just read. And so obviously the emphasis is on the father. But we must also think about the relationship of the father with not just one son, but with both sons. And as we proceed from this point and we think about point number one, though, sin is obviously the problem. And we have two sons here, and sin dealt with each one in a different way. But in the end, the results ended up being the same in regard to the sin and the impact and the effect that it had on each one. Obviously, one, in the course of the story, repents, but we're not talking about the repentance as much as we're talking about how sin affected both of them and how it dealt with both of them. And as we think about that, I want you to see the effect that it had on both of them. Because the effect that it had on both of them, really, in many ways, even though it dealt with them in different ways, the effect had a application to something that was very similar, but in contrasting ways. It affected their view of being an heir. It affected their view of their home. And it affected their view and their perspective of their heart. And those are the three subpoints that we want to develop. It affected their view, first, of being an heir. Secondly, of what they thought about their home. And third, it affected their heart. And so as we think about it affected their view of being an heir, as we look at the story, it begins a certain man that he had the possessions that he did, and that the younger son came and he said, "Give me what's coming to me." Very selfish, obviously. But he said, I just simply want what's coming to me. And under the laws of inheritance of the Jewish law of Moses, the oldest son received 2/3 the amount, or twice as much, of what the next one in the inheritance law would receive. What that means is this younger son received 1/3 of everything that his father had. So if his father had $100,000, you know, shekels, whatever it may have been called, denarii, but if he had 100,000 units of money, the son received 33,000 of those. So he received a rather substantial amount, regardless of how we think about it, 1/3 of all that his father had. And as we look at how this has affected these two sons about being an heir, you notice in verse 12, the younger son says, "Give me." But as you read further down and you read about the older son in verse 29, look at what he says. "You never gave me." Yet he had given him the bulk of the estate. In fact, the father says what? "All that I have, everything that remains," because the younger son is, he squandered that. That's gone. "But everything that remains, son, everything you can lay your eye upon, everything you can touch, it's all yours." And yet, sin caused him to say to his father, what? "You never gave me so much as even a small goat. You never gave me." Caused the younger son to say, Give me everything that's coming to me. Give me everything that I'm entitled to. That's really what a lot of this was about for the younger son. Entitlement. That's how sin dealt with him in this regard. You know, I deserve this. I got it coming to me. And he goes out and, of course, he blows it and he loses it all because it affected them about being an heir. Later, this would empty all the pocketbook of the younger son. Sadly, this view of the effect of being an heir would not empty the pocketbook of the older son, but it would empty his heart, which is far worse. Better to stand before God with an empty pocketbook than an empty heart. Better to stand before the Father with no money than no heart. But secondly, we see that sin affected these two boys about their view of their home. You see, the younger son, we are told in verse 13, that as soon as the father divided this all out to him, not many days after, once he kind of got everything in order, verse 13, the younger son gathered all together, and what did he do? He left home. He left the place where he had grown up with. He left his father. He left his brother. He left all the comforts of home. He left home. And yet, when we read a little further down in the text, in verses 25 through 28, and we think about how sin was dealing with the older son in regard to the home, verses 25 through 28, what do we find? We find that the text tells us that in verse 28, he would not go in. Just beyond the door, verses 25 through 28, just beyond the door of where the older son stood was a celebration. A celebration of the return of the younger son. He had been dead but was alive again, lost and found. Everyone was rejoicing. Just beyond the door was so much joy, so much happiness inside that home. The home that the younger son had left. The home the younger son had abandoned. The place he had thrown behind. It's where he returns. He left it. The older son never left. He stayed there. But now we find him what? He won't even go inside the door. Ironic, isn't it? The one who left is now back inside. The one who always stayed won't come in again. And so sin dealt with them very differently, but again with the same results. They both didn't recognize what they inherited. They both did not recognize the home. One left it, one refused to come in. But then sin also in dealing with these two sons of this very generous father, again, it's really about the father. Two sons, two different sons, with one father. But we see that it affected their heart. We think about the younger son as we look back at our text in Luke chapter 15, and we see that once the text tells us that he comes to himself, one of the greatest terms that we'll read about in all the Bible really in verse 17, when he came to himself. He realized, he for the first time, he looked at himself in the mirror. He says, that's me. He came to himself. Maybe he'd been blaming a lot of people. Maybe he'd been blaming the famine. Maybe he'd been blaming probably all those friends that helped him spend that money, but now they had abandoned him. Maybe he had blamed a lot of people, and he had pointed fingers at a lot of people, but finally, there was only one person left to point a finger at. That was him. And he came to himself. And when he came to himself, as many of us do, upon the realization of our sin, the gravity of our sin, the way we have hurt so many, the way we have hurt ourselves, and particularly the way we have hurt our Father. Maybe we overestimate how little we are worth at that moment. We devalue ourselves maybe too much. Because we read, as we think about how this affected the heart of each man, each son, He says, I am no longer worthy. And in verses 18 and 19, when he evaluates himself that way, maybe, just maybe, obviously in the eyes of the Father, he's thinking too little of himself. But when you think about the older son, he thought too highly of himself. Because in verse 29, as he's having this back and forth with his own father outside, he says, I have never transgressed your commandments. Now, was that really true? I think he thought it was at that moment, especially compared to his younger brother. And maybe sometimes we get to the point we say, well, sure, I've sinned, but not like that guy. I'm not as bad as she is. I'm not as bad as he is. I haven't done what they did. And as long as I can, you know, stay one step up from them, then I'm okay. No, it's still sin. I've still transgressed. No, I may have not done the same things that guy did, but I've done the things this guy did. It's not about that guy. It's about this guy. And he thought too highly of himself because he said, I have never. Whereas the other guy, sin caused him to think too little of himself. I'm simply not worthy anymore. So sin is the root of the problem with both sons. They both have a sin problem. Sin dealt with them very differently, but in the end, the result was the same. Now, one man repented before the story was over, but prior to the repentance, he was just as lost as his older brother was, and the younger brother was just as lost as the other one. So they both were just as lost because they both had been affected by sin. The Bible tells us in 1 John chapter 2, verse 15, that we should not love the world because all the things of the world, the lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life are of the world, not of God. These things are passing away. These basically, in 1 John 2:15, are the three main avenues of sin. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life. And any one of these may affect any one of us at any time. And sometimes they may gang up and jump on us at the same time. But as we think about that, and we apply it to this first point about sin dealt with both of them slightly differently, but in the end the results were the same, we might say that the problem with the younger son was the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes. But the problem with the older son was the pride of life. But they all three are still sin. And they all three still ended up affecting them the same way. But now we come to the Father. Number two, the second sentence you see up there. The Father dealt with them the same. But the results, sadly, were very different. And as we analyze that, here are three suggestions that I want to make as to how the Father dealt with them. There are some things that the behavior of his son, sinful as it was, it did not affect in the Father's heart. Number one, it did not affect his affection for each son. His affection for each son was not lessened. It was not diminished. In verse 20, he ran to one with compassion, fell on his neck, hugged him, embraced him, and kissed him. Filthy and dirty as he was, coming from the pig pen, half starved to death as he was, victim of famine, nasty and probably not smelling very good as he would have been on that long journey by foot, barefoot apparently. The Father embraced him. And as I visualize that, I don't see him letting go for a long time. For the other son, in verse 28, the text tells us that the father left the celebration, went outside, and stood with him, pleading for him to come in. And so he went to both sons with affection, with tenderness, with care. And their sins did not diminish his affection or his tenderness for either one. Secondly, we will see that the father treated them both the same because it did not affect his attention to them. His affection, number one, his attention, number two, was not diminished. When the younger son came in verse 20, the text says that the father, he rose and he ran to him. And then as you keep reading in verses 23 and 22 and 23, the father says, put shoes on his feet. Put the not just any robe, put the best robe on him. Put the ring on his hand, signifying that sonship was restored to him. Kill the fatted calf. Care and comfort. Attention. Attention to this sinful boy who has now returned. Attention to this sinful son. Care and comfort. In verse 28, as he leaves that celebration and it goes out to his older son who is refusing to come in, care and comfort. Oh, he didn't need shoes and robe and a ring and anything like that. He needed care. He needed comfort. And the father gave it to him. Notice how, and I hear this so tenderly expressed as the older son is outside ranting and raving and so angry about everything. In verse 31, son, you're always with me, and all that I have is yours. I hear care. I hear comfort. I hear a tender voice lovingly expressing how much attention he's giving to this son. So it did not affect or change or diminish his affection. It did not affect or change or diminish his attention. And third, for the father, it did not affect or diminish his correction. You will notice in verses 21 and 22, as the younger son was self-debasing, I am no longer worthy, make me like one of your hired servants. He's rehearsed the speech. You read that back in the pig pen. He's rehearsed the speech. And he's said it to himself over and over. And God, to the glory and credit to him, that he said it to his father. At least he started it. Not only did he have the best of intentions to lay it on the line with his father and admit and confess everything, he did it. He carried through with it. At least he started. Because apparently the father interrupted him. And it's like, no, it's not that you're no longer worthy. I'm going to put a ring back on your finger that signifies you're my son. Not just anybody wore the ring, okay? I'm going to put the best robe on you. I'm going to put shoes on your feet. We're going to kill the fatted calf. We're going to have a celebration. And notice he says to him, this my son. He doesn't say, this guy who showed up, this guy who doesn't deserve it, this my son. Gladly, happily, cheerfully, he calls him my son. Let's celebrate. He corrected him from saying, I'm no longer worthy. Make me a hired servant. To the older son, he does the same thing, because in verses 29 through 32, he comes outside for the celebration is going on, and he tries to reason with him. And I don't hear a reprimand. I don't hear harshness. I hear gentleness. I hear tenderness. I hear an understanding father who maybe is giving the older son a little leeway because he knows this is hard. He's been faithful the whole time. He's served him and he's never left his side the whole time. And maybe he understands why the older son might be a little upset about this, but he's saying, son, have some perspective. We thought he was dead. We thought we would never see him again. And there he is, right there. Correction. The father dealt with each one, when you think about affection, attention, and correction, the same way. Sadly, the results were not the same. Because the story leaves us with one son inside, fully enjoying and being blessed by the Father's grace and goodness, but one son outside resisting that same grace, that same goodness. In short, you might kind of sum it up with one word we find in verse 20. It did not affect or diminish his compassion for either son. You see, the father, remember it's two different sons, but the same father, our father. The father loved both his sons in spite of their imperfections and in spite of their mistakes and in spite of their shortcomings. And I say, thank God, because I am those sons. We are those sons. Sometimes we find ourselves in the disposition of the younger one. Sometimes we find ourselves in the disposition of the older one. But we are those sons. Sin will deal with us in a variety of ways. But the results, if we let sin keep on capturing us, the results will be the same. We'll be lost. We may be as near to the celebration and the grace of the Father as the front porch. But as long as we let sin keep its hold on us, we will still be lost. We may be as far away as the far country in the pig pen, but as long as we let sin keep its hold on us there, we will still be lost. Thank God that we have the Father who, in spite of our imperfections, in spite of our shortcomings, He still loves us. And we know that because He sent His Son Jesus to die for us on the cross. And we know that because He left His Word with us in the New Testament as to how we can wash these sins away when we are baptized in the name of Jesus Christ and added to His church. We know that's the Father who loves us. We know that that's the Father who cares for us. We know that's the Father whose grace and mercy and love we hear, we believe, we obey, and we are saved by. The Father. The Father who doesn't want us to fail. The Father who doesn't want us to fall. The Father who doesn't want us to live and die in sin. The Father who will see us from a great way off and have compassion and run toward us. In the 1992 Barcelona Summer Olympics, there was a competitor named Derek Redmond. And Derek Redmond was from Great Britain, and he was involved in the 400-yard race. And Derek Redmond was very promising and he had achieved this great level and was at this great point, they fire the pistol and he takes off and he's in the pack of runners, and suddenly, not in a rehearsal, not in a practice, in the middle of the actual Olympics, broadcast for all the world to see, Derek Redmond stopped running. He stumbled, and then he fell. He had torn his hamstring, and there was no hope at all that he would ever finish that race. Suddenly, from the crowd came a man, rushing past all the spectators, rushing past security, rushing past all the medical people, on to the track. He knelt down to Derek Redmond, put his arm over his own shoulder, and lifted him up. And they walked across the finish line together. And yes, it was his father. That's just an illustration of our Father. Have you been wounded and hurt by the world and all the sins that have compiled upon you? Your Father, our Father, has compassion. And He wants to lovingly help you across the finish line of salvation. So if you're ready to obey Him, if you're ready to submit to Him, we encourage you. Would you come this morning as we stand and we sing?